So today's case, number 4 in the Blue Cliff record, is called Deshaun Holds His Bundle. It reads like this. Deshaun came to Kwe Shang's monastery. Holding his pilgrim's bundle, he entered the Dharma hall. He walked from east to west and from west to east. Looking around, he said, "Nothing, nothing." And he went out. Sui Tao, the compiler of the Blue Cliff record, inserted, completely exposed into the story. Deshaun reached the gate of the monastery and said to himself, "There is no use in being so hasty." Assuming a dignified manner, he entered again and looked about. This time, Kwe Shang was in his seat. Deshaun spread his bowing mat and said, "Your Reverence." Kwe Shang reached for his hosu, that's a horsehair ceremonial whisk, and Deshaun shouted, "Ho!" flourished his sleeves and went out. So he had those long sort of ropes and just... Sui Tao again inserted, completely exposed. Deshaun turned his back to the Dharma hall, put on his footgear and departed. That evening, Kwe Shang called the head monk and asked, "Where is the recent arrival?" The head monk said, "At this time he turned his back to the Dharma hall, put on his footgear and departed." Kwe Shang said, "That young fellow will someday ascend to a lonely peak and build a grass hermitage. He will laugh at the Buddha and revile the ancestral teachers." And Sui Tao added, he wrote, "adding frost to snow." So this is quite a case and different on the face of it than the relationship many of you have to Zen. This story would have fit quite a few centers in the 1960s and 70s as we were transplanting Zen from Japan, China, and Korea. There was then quite a bit of stomping, glaring, and yelling. If you look at one of the stories in Shoes Outside the Door, an anecdotal history of the San Francisco Zen Center from its inception until the early 1990s, you'll find one of the senior students at each of 3 meetings with the different communities giving a bone-shattering yell, thus making a spontaneous an improvisational Zen presentation, although he did the same thing meeting after meeting after meeting. 2 shouts, 3 shouts, but what next, as one of our ancestors said in case 10 of this book. I'm not sure yet if Zen in America is maturing. There is certainly less shouting and glaring in the Zendo. Although someone did recently call me a weasel for a response I gave in questions and answers. I think the name giver thought I was equivocating in my response to his question. So I don't know if our 21st century Zen is more mature or simply flatter and a little more like church. I suppose, as Eiken Roshi said, we'll know better about all of this in 100 years. So I'd like to tell you a couple other stories that feature Deshaun, which may shed more light on this present case. Both of these stories take place later in Deshaun's life, when he was a teacher. Deshaun one day descended to the dining hall, bowls in hand. Shui Feng asked him, "Old teacher, the bell has not rung." and the drum has not sounded. Where are you going with your bowls? Deshan turned immediately and went back to his room. Sui Feng brought up the incident with Yanto, a senior student in the Sangha. Yanto remarked, Deshan, great as he is, still does not know the last word. Hearing of this, Deshan sent for Yanto and asked, don't you approve of this old monk? Yanto whispered his meaning. Deshan said nothing further. Next day, when Deshan took the high seat before his assembly, his presentation was quite different from usual. Yanto came to the front of the hall, clapping his hands and laughing out loud. And he said, how wonderful, the old boss has grasped the last word. From now on, no one under heaven will get the better of him. So I really enjoy the first image in this koan. Deshan, maybe realizing the meal was late, went to the dining hall at the usual time, bowls in hand. Or maybe he misread the sunlight in his room, which he relied on to know the time. Or maybe he thought he'd heard the cloud bell, the sound that invites everyone for the meal. Whatever the circumstance, he proceeded to the dining hall with bowls in hand. But Sui Feng interrupted his passage and said, old teacher, the bell has not rung, and the drum has not sounded. Where are you going with bowls in hand? Deshan turned immediately and went back to his room. Now Deshan, the old and revered teacher, who is about 80 years old at this time, could have said to Sui Feng, I'm a little hungry today. Might we eat a little early? Or, you know, we're on a tight schedule and you're late with the meal. What's with that? And he could have continued saying, the Sangha has been sitting in session all day. Many have hurting knees and aching backs, and a late meal is hard on them. And it will be especially hard on the supper dishwashers, who will be hard-pressed to finish cleaning, sweeping, and mopping by the time the call to Zazen comes at 7:20. But Deshan said none of this. He simply turned and went back to his room. Up until the present time, the teacher's room has been called in Sino-Japanese, the Hojo. This name was taken from the room or hut that Vimalakirti occupied. Although Vimalakirti's hut was only 10 feet square, not 10 square feet, but 10 feet square, when entering it, as we did in October, as we spent 3 weeks reading and deliberating on the Vimalakirti Sutra, we found that it contained multitudes of Buddhas, of Mahasattvas, of Bodhisattvas, monastics, lay women, and lay men. Although it was a small room, it had space enough to contain universes. Anyway, in this current story, Deshan came from the Hojo and returned to it. He emerged and he receded like the great ocean with nearly a word, flooding and ebbing, present and absent, abundant and scarce. When looking at koan, don't pass too quickly by any one aspect, image, or meeting. Much is happening in these first few lines. And though Daishan said not a word, he presented the underpinning, the configuration of reality. So this koan, Daishan's bowls, has a resonance with today's koan, but the later Daishan's presentational style is more subtle and nuanced. Here is another story from his latter life. Hyo, the attendant, asked Daishan, "Where have all the past Buddhas and ancestors gone?" Daishan said, "What did you say?" Hyo said, "I commanded an exceedingly fine racehorse to spring forth, but only a lame tortoise appeared." Daishan was silent. The next day, when Daishan came from his bath, Hyo offered him tea. Daishan gave his shoulder a pat. The attendant said, "The old boss has noticed for the first time." Daishan was again silent. Commenting on this, Eiken Roshi said, "Maybe the old boss noticed, but the attendant did not. He, like Sui Feng, missed the subtle but quite intimate articulation of their teacher. Where have all the past Buddhas and ancestors gone?" And Daishan responded with, "What did you say?" Again, don't pass by Daishan's response too quickly. He isn't equivocating. These words are filled with more space than the Hojo, than Vimalakirti's room. The attendant, narrowed by his own ideas, didn't experience that vastness, the fathomless depths of, "What did you say?" And responded with, "I commanded an exceedingly fine racehorse to spring forth, but only a lame tortoise appeared." And Daishan said nothing. Thinking about this, I suppose being called a weasel puts me in fairly good company. Here again, we can see a resemblance to the young Daishan. In the latter two koan, his responses are more subtle, more attuned and more intimate than earlier on. The gentle pat of the old teacher is not something the young practitioner on pilgrimage could have mustered. Throughout Daishan's life, he tended towards few words, physical demonstration, and non-verbal exclamations. Daishan was not quiet because he had nothing to say. The way he lived his life, the way he walked, the way he ate and bathed, the way he carried his bowls was his direct and intimate teaching. And as I've said before, the point of practice, the point of your zazen, is not becoming a Buddha. That would be too limited an outcome. The point is to become, or to be yourself all the way to the bottom. Daishan, both when young and old, had a propensity for few words and very direct physical manners. Vimalakirti, except in his presentation of non-duality, was always quite eloquent. Yanto was sharp and poetic as a young man, and then right before he died, and Sui Feng was potent and generous and all his teachings and walking abouts. This practice opens the gateway to your own expression, whether through cooking or doing acupuncture and therapy, whether through protesting or being silent or working with children or with those near death. So now I'd like to return to the story at hand. I think with the stories of the older Day Shun, you'll have a different appreciation for the young man on pilgrimage. So Day Shun came to Kui Shan's monastery and walked back and forth and looked around the Dharma hall and described exactly what he saw, saying, "Nothing, nothing." I wonder, are these words the same as Bodhidharma's vast emptiness, nothing holy, or different? Were they expressing the same mind or another mind? Day Shun then made his way to the monastery gates, but hesitated and wondered to himself if he was being too hasty. This is an interesting place to investigate. If there is truly nothing, nothing at all, if there is really vast emptiness, nothing holy, who is being too hasty? Who is having that moment of doubt? Why? When Bodhidharma left the palace of the emperor, even if the entire country were to go after him, he would not have returned. This is a mind of great confidence. But you know, to have doubt and let it in, to have hesitation, worry, and anxiety, and let it in, is also a mind of great confidence. Allow those hesitations, allow those doubts to enter. Let them affect you in the ways that they do. But please, especially at those times, stay wedded to your one and only practice. It will hold you and allow you to move in a different way than you usually do when filled with doubt or worry or hesitation. Stay with your practice, and the doubts and the worries will be entryways to an even deeper and more subtle reality. The young Day Shun did this. He followed his doubt, and he returned to find Kui Shan. He walked up to him, and as he was about to bow, Kui Shan reached for his whisk. Day Shun shouted, "Ho!" The cry that scares away demons and wipes everything away, flourished his sleeves like so. I gotta get you to do with your sleeves. I should have borrowed that. And he walked out. Personally, because it isn't my way and isn't the way we're moving in our Zazen currently, I find these type of actions a bit dramatic and stylized. I've been to zendos and dharma halls where ho, kats, and other things are yelled or banged. And I find them, excepting in one instance, to be rather formulaic, and actually a way to hide from both the intimacy of relationship and the intimacy of expression. But as I said earlier, one yell, two yells, but now what? What would you show then? However, once Eiken Roshi gave a shout, that if I listen closely, I can still hear these many years later. There was a memorial service at Palolo Zen Center for a longtime member, a crusty, curmudgeonly guy who was fond of ho and cots. As the ceremony proceeded and one by one folks went to the altar and talked out loud to the recently deceased man, expressing their sorrow and joy, Eiken Roshi took his place in line. When his turn came, he didn't rise from his wheelchair, but sat staring silently straight ahead. And then he said in a voice, with no old man quivers or trembles, "Well, Ted, I guess it all comes to this." And then this frail, wheelchair-bound old man gave a yell that went on and on and on. The yell was clear and alive. It was old and young. It was dead and alive, born and unborn, and it was dead and undying. And the silence that joined it also screamed into the complete darkness in which nothing is seen. After Daishan's great shout and flourishing of his sleeves, he left, and Sui Tao again interjected, completely exposed. And I wonder, who was exposed? Was Daishan exposed? Or was it Kui Shan? Or was it Sui Tao himself was saying those very words? And I also wonder, what was exposed? Were these words of praise or of rebuke? Of who and of what? And now I'd like to present my response to all those questions that I just posed. I suppose Sui Tao would call that adding frost to snow.